Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy football. We're with you a day earlier this week because myself, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo, we couldn't wait to get stuck into this wildcard weekend, Jeff. I mean, no wonder they call it wild. It had everything.
It was crazy, and there were so many chances for teams to win and didn't, and some teams found a way to win when it looked like they had no chance.
We had big plays. We had heartbreaking plays. We had controversy. We had the bad weather was a factor in certainly in three of the four games, wasn't it? Whether it be the cold or the rain or the wind. I mean, this is what playoff football is.
You know, and sometimes you say, well, why don't they move the season up so they don't have to play in this? But you know what? It adds another dimension to the games. And like you say, strategically, it affects the game. The player's performances affects the game. And we're going to talk about, obviously, the Minnesota and Seattle game. But I really firmly believe that the cold affected the holder in that you watched all three of those holds, Neil. And none of them was what you wanted. He got the laces once. He got a bad tilt on the ball once. And then he got the laces again on the one he missed. And, you know, Walsh was able to overcome two of them. But the big one, when they really needed it, he couldn't overcome the bad hold.
Yeah, we'll go through that because I've got a lot of questions we've had about, you know, laces out. And obviously that's a phrase that everyone understands. So we'll get into that in a little while. But, Jeff, we often, just on that while you've mentioned it, we often see the holder spin the football. It was almost like Jeff Locke, the holder, had been told, it's too cold for that. Catch the ball and get it down. We didn't even see him try to spin it around.
Yeah, and that's something that those guys, one of the reasons why, and this is such great stuff to talk about. You know, you hear questions sometimes, well, why does the punter hold for the kicker and not a wide receiver or a quarterback, somebody who's used to holding the or handling the football? The reason it is during practice, while the position players, the quarterbacks, the receivers, they're doing all their things, the punter and the kicker have all that time on their own. Mm. So kickers are meticulous about how they like the ball placed for those field goals. And so the long snapper, who usually that's all he does, the holder and the kicker are off on the side or on another field just working constantly, hours and hours and hours and hours, to make sure that the ball is exactly the way they want it. I believe, and it's not been addressed in the media, but I really truly believe, after doing this for so many years, that Locke was so concerned about the cold, because it's so hard to catch the ball in the cold, that his number one priority was, as you say, Neil, just get the thing down and let Walsh, you know, hack at it. And I'm going to tell you something. That seems like such a small thing. And I got a question this morning from a journalist in Canada that asked me, Jeff, how could it be that the laces affect a 27-yard kick? It's not the physical aspect of the kick.
Psychological, when he sees them laces facing him, Jeff.
Exactly, because now his approach changes, his leg swing changes, and again, it seems like it's such a little thing. But to those kickers, that is a huge thing.
Well, I only kicked in the British League and a little bit for the Great Britain squad. But, Jeff, I was a barefoot kicker, so laces out meant everything to me. I didn't want them laces facing me.
If it was, if you were barefoot in Minnesota,
I wouldn't have had a foot. We're going to go through the games as they were played on Saturday night and Sunday. Then we will take your questions in the mailbag as well. And we are, just a reminder, you can sort of still apply for tickets, although we are very oversubscribed, but we love the fan response has been incredible. But we're out on the road for this coming week, Jeff, Wednesday and Thursday in Newcastle and Edinburgh. People can still apply and, you know, chance your arm and see what comes of it. And then obviously the week after, there's still options for people to get there in Manchester and Birmingham. But we're looking forward to getting out on the road, aren't we?
I can't wait. You know, this is such a great opportunity for us to get around to fans of the NFL that, you know, to talk football, to discuss things about the game that you just don't have. And, you know, certainly in a little 2-minute fill on the TV broadcast, or even an hour's worth of conversation, in the podcast. So this is a chance to really grind on some topics, talk about football, do some demonstrations, take questions, and just be around, you know, great NFL fans for an evening.
And we're not going glitz and glamour, are we, Jeff? We're taking a whiteboard, some marker pens. We're going old school. Yep. I mean, at the end of the day, people just want to hear, well, they want to see you break down the games, to be honest. They want to see these big games coming up, and we're going to get a chance to do that and meet the fans and see why they support their teams, what they love about the game. They can ask us about things behind the scenes at Sky. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I think it's going to be fantastic, and certainly, you know, I can't wait for that train to get rolling north and on Wednesday, and us to have an opportunity, you know, get with the people.
All right, let's get to our games, recapping the wild card round of the playoffs. Then started on Saturday night, Kansas City won for the 11th time in a row, and really it was an absolute drubbing, 30-0 over the Houston Texans. And Jeff, we talked about it on air very early. Actually, we got on the touchscreen to show it. I've just been writing about it. Actually, Doug Peterson called a heck of a game for the Kansas City Chiefs, because even before he got hurt, they negated J.J. Watt, who had just one assist on the day.
It was a phenomenal job by all of the staff in Kansas City. Andy Reid has assembled a great coaching staff. Bobby Sutton, the defensive coordinator. Doug Peterson, who, again, you know, fans of NFL Europe, those of us who, you know, went through the league, 1994, Doug Peterson is our quarterback with the Rhine Fire in NFL Europe. And, you know, it's interesting. I didn't see Doug until 2008, the spring of 2008, I'm at SMU, and I'm recruiting the state of Louisiana, and I go to a little private school up in Monroe, Louisiana, Shreveport, Louisiana, mm-hmm. and walk into the coach's office, and who's sitting there as the head coach of Calvary Baptist? Doug Peterson.
Wow.
And he went from a high school coach in Louisiana to the quarterback coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, and now the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs, and probably going to be a head coach, if not this go-round, another go-round.
Yeah, I think he's certainly going to get some looks this go-around, although it's not been widely reported. I think he's growing in that sort of stature, isn't he? Within the business and within the industry, he has that respect of other
coaches.
He's
had an opportunity to go into Philadelphia and interview for the Philadelphia job. He's familiar with that situation. You know, Jeffrey Lurie, the owner in Philadelphia, knows him personally, so I'm hopeful for him, and I'm excited for him. And again, but now the number one task he's got is to go up to New England and find a way to, you know, match wits with Matt Patricia and that nasty New England defense.
Chiefs got off to a fast start as well. I mean, this is huge. I thought, and I mentioned it in the broadcast, they needed to steal some points. Actually, as it turned out, they didn't, because they steamrolled them. But going up against that defense, I thought defense and special teams for Kansas City would be important. They got it from special teams early on. Niall Davis,
and, you know, we talked about this briefly on the broadcast, but, you know, Niall Davis, the great thing about to me is there's a town called Missouri City. It's actually a suburb south of Houston, and he went to Marshall High School, and I remember recruiting in that area at the time, and Now was a phenomenal high school player that chose to go to the University of Arkansas and had a good career at Arkansas. Not a great career, but a good career. And kind of got, came to the NFL and kind of got labeled as a guy that would put the ball on the ground, a fumbler. And so he's never really had a chance as a running back. But boy, as a kick returner, Dave Tobe, the special teams coach in Kansas City, uses him extremely well. He's got good speed. He's big, so he can run through arm tackles.
He's a kick returner, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know, he's fearless up inside. So I think Kansas City has an advantage throughout the playoffs because they play such good special teams.
The defense got after Brian Hoyer, and Hoyer struggled, didn't he, Jeff? 4 interceptions. He lost a fumble. It was just from start to finish. He just, I don't know if the stage was too big for him, but I mean, it just clearly didn't play a good game.
I just think that the Texans offensively aren't there yet.
No.
You know, you're looking at a football team with really one threat, and some young guys that are trying to learn how to do it, and you know, you lose your running back, and you're trying to manage that by committee. And although I thought Alfred Blue played a good football game, they ran the ball a little better than I thought they probably would. But you're up against a Kansas City defense that is nasty. Oh, you know, you get Justin Houston back, Tamba Hali.
All over the place, Jack. It's a lot of guys making plays.
Oh, and their secondary, Neil. Man, oh, man, what a great bunch. And, you know, so Bobby Sutton, the defensive coordinator, really kind of ganged up on them because you know, you take Hopkins out of the game, and it really wasn't much there to threaten them from the Texans.
I thought it was interesting that coming into the home straight, Jeremy Maclin was the go-to guy for Alex Smith, and last year it was Travis Kelce, and then Maclin goes down with what looked like a knee injury. Turns out it's a high ankle sprain, so you know, we've got to wait and see how that affects his availability for this weekend. But they almost went straight back to Travis Kelce again, and Chris Connolly stepped up, and Albert Wilson made play. That's a sign of a team that's won 11 in a row.
Yeah, and you know, that's how you win 11 in a row. You don't become dependent on just one guy. Now, it'll be interesting to see with Maclin. I'm sure they'll have him in the hyperbaric chamber, and they'll do everything they can to get him back. But
it's not 1 week due, is it?
Yeah, you know, Neil, high ankle sprains are really, really difficult to get a guy back from. Jeremy Maclin's a tough guy. And you know, this is the playoffs, so if there's any way, I'm sure that he'll be on the field, but I don't think he'll be full speed at least for a couple weeks.
All right, let's move on to the late game on Saturday night, which it had a bit of everything. It looked like it was going to be a bit of a snoozer. Pittsburgh were 15-0 up, then back came the Bengals, and then we had controversy as well. I think it showed some of the bad side of rivalry games. So I want to look at this in three parts, Jeff, if you will. It's the easiest way to break this up. I want to talk about Pittsburgh's coaches.
Uh-huh.
I want to talk about the Bengals' meltdown and then the game itself. And I know they all kind of tie into each other. But the reason I wanted to start with Pittsburgh's coaches is because we are looking at the Bengals and we're talking about all their ill discipline. But you have to point the finger a little bit at Mike Tomlin's men as well, because Mike Munchak pulls the hair of Reggie Nelson on the sidelines early in the game. That's an assistant coach. Joey Porter is all the way over the other sideline at the end of the game when all that stuff's going on. And I thought about this after we'd done our broadcast and been on air, and I thought about, well, Mike Tomlin actually has a bit of previous for interfering with games. Do you remember Jacoby Jones' big kickoff return?
Yep.
Mike pretends he can't see what he's doing and he gets in his way. I say that they failed to control their coaches, and some of that spilled over to Pittsburgh's players as well. What do you think?
Well, again, ultimately, the onus for the way a team handles itself falls directly on the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way to slice it. That's the way it is. You are responsible for your team, how they prepare, how they play, how they handle themselves, all of those things. So, you know, it's interesting because when the fallout from this came, you know, there were a lot of Bengal fans who immediately, which is the natural human reaction, pointed the finger back at the Steeler fans.
Right. Yep.
To me, it was embarrassing for the game. And I think it's something that I'm sure the Rooney family wasn't very pleased with. Mm. Obviously pleased with the win, pleased with that kind of ill discipline and all the penalties and the coaches all over the place. And I just know this. If you were in Kansas City or St. Louis or Philadelphia, wherever Coach Vermeil was at, and you were an assistant coach and you got a penalty on the sideline because you couldn't control yourself, or you were out across, not on your side of the field, across on the other side of the field, you're not a trainer, you're not a doctor, he's not your player.
Yeah, the rule there, Jeff, just to clarify for the listeners, is that it's the doctors and trainers and the head coach who are allowed out onto the field. How John Parry and his crew missed that, and then he's jawing back and forth. Yes, there's a response from the Bengals, but they didn't even see that. It's like they didn't even notice that Joey Porter was there.
Poorly handled by the officials, too. And again, I'm just going to tell you, if you did that with Coach Vermeil, it would be in no uncertain terms handled. And Do it with Bill Parcells, ain't happening. Or do it with Bill Belichick, ain't happening. Mm. So again, I'm disappointed for the Steelers. I'm disappointed. I mean, again, I understand the heat of battle. We're all there. We all been there. I've been in playoff games, championship games. But you cannot interfere, which is what Joey was doing. With the game.
What did you say to me a couple of weeks ago on this podcast? I can't remember the exact quote, but basically, we'll see what Mike Tomlin does about this now, or what the Steelers do about this now, because you said if you're allowing it, you're condoning it, right?
Here it is. It's so true. If you have a behavior that's a negative behavior, no matter what that is, right? Just like with your children. If you don't extinguish it, you encourage it, right? So, again, and it's interesting. tonight Alabama is going to play Clemson for the national championship. Well, one of the things that you learn at Alabama real quickly is you go into the coach's locker room, there's a sign as you go out onto the field. If you see it, you're either coaching it or you're allowing it.
Right.
And that is exactly true.
Let's move on to the Bengals then, because they had plenty of chances to win this game in the end, a game that they weren't in for a long period of time. Let's talk about their ill-discipline at the end. You could say ill-discipline in terms of looking after the football from Jeremy Hill. That started things off. But even then, Pittsburgh are up against it with Ben unable to stretch the field. Vontaze Burfict with the hit on Antonio Brown. Joey Porter comes over. We talked about all of that. Then there's an additional 15 yards from Adam Jones. A 50-yard field goal on a cold, rainy night suddenly became a 35-yarder. And, my goodness, what a way to end a season.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You get exactly, when you go to shop for groceries, you get exactly what you take off the shelf.
Uh-huh.
And let me give our listeners some Vontaze Burfict history, right? Vontaze is from L.A. Mm-hmm. He's from Central L.A. He's been through some really tough times in his life. And he goes to Arizona State and is a freshman All-American at Arizona State. Then he becomes an All-Pac-10 player. Then he becomes an All-American. Then he gets suspended by his own head coach for personal foul calls. I'll take you back to the Stanford game where Arizona State has a chance to beat Stanford. He face masks Doug Baldwin and gets a 15-yard penalty. Mm. Then the official, because he gets in an official's face, gets another 15-yard penalty. They lose the game to Stanford. So there's a history here. He was the Pac-10, which is one of the top conferences in America,
yep,
Defensive Player of the Year. 32 NFL teams passed on him for 7 rounds of the draft. Now, I'm not a math guy, but I know this. That's a lot of football players,
yeah,
that got drafted and you didn't, and you are 6'1", 250, run 4.6, violent hitter. He's a great football player.
What you would actually, if you just looked at what he can do on the field and just took the football stuff.
He's a first-round draft choice.
Every team in the NFL needs one.
First-round draft choice.
Everyone needs a Vontaze Burfict from that point of view.
Why is he undrafted? Because he can't control
him. Can't control it.
Yeah.
He's done that before, Jeff, as well. We saw that he was at the center of the previous two games between these two teams. Only the week before, in week 17, people can go and check it out online. It was doing the rounds on Twitter last night. A vicious hit on Baltimore rookie tight end Max Williams the week before. Just the week before, the ball is not even coming Max Williams' way. He's running and out. He's looking back at the quarterback. Burfict takes his head off. We just can't have that. We can't have it now.
It's been that way. It'll continue to be that way. I watched really closely during the game. And, Marvin in particular, but a number of Bengal coaches, every time he was either on their sideline or, at the end of a play or during the break between series when the defense was off the field, were constantly talking to him about, and I know what they're talking. It wasn't about game adjustments. It's about keeping your composure and not doing something that would hurt your football team. And what does he do?
And then Adam Jones does the same thing. I want to talk about Adam Jones after the game in a minute because I think it goes back to some of the stuff we've talked about with player behavior before. But so this late meltdown from the Bengals, this is not new. We've talked about Marvin Lewis in the playoffs, Andy Dalton in the playoffs. Look at big games they've played this year, primetime games. They haven't played that well. They had Denver. They played very well against Denver on Monday Night Football. What happens? Late fumble and they lose the game. Again, you want to talk about a stage being too big or a team that can't get over that hump. A talented team. So a couple of things really is how do they learn to sort of finish that way? And that stuff you just talked about, they're trying to talk to Burfict and it's going in one ear clearly and straight out the other. Does this come back on Marvin Lewis? Because you thought, and we both thought when we talked on Saturday night, that it could come back on Marvin. It's the kind of stuff that gets coaches fired. The history of the playoffs, the player activity. But it does look like he's safe in Cincinnati for now.
Every organization has their own way of doing things. Every organization puts a premium on certain things when they look at players. Historically, the Bengals have always been a team that looks first at, can the guy play? Second, what kind of guy is he? And again, they have had a history of off the field things in Cincinnati. If you look at their football team and you go through their roster, I'll give you Carlos Dunlap as another example, a guy that freakish athletic ability. You know, I remember when he was coming out of Florida, played hard sometimes, didn't play hard sometimes, had a DUI arrest, yada, 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 yada. Mm-hmm. So they just believe that they can either manage those personalities well enough. And I think...
I thought they cleaned that up for a while.
Let me make a statement here that I truly believe, right? If you're going to have those kind of guys, particularly those kind of guys on one side of the football, you better have a pretty strong sheriff riding herd over that bunch. And Mike Zimmer could do it because Mike Zimmer was a no-nonsense guy. And when he brought Adam Jones from Dallas, where he had him, and Jones has had, go all the way through the guy's history, all the way back to West Virginia.
Making it rain and
he's,
all that
he's had a history problems. Of all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
But Zim has a way of, tough love with those guys that they can get. Mm. Well, now it's a different story. Zim's not there anymore. And what I have heard from inside in Cincinnati is this is a pattern that's developed over the course of the season. On the practice field, in the meeting room, those kinds of things where players are disrespectful, players don't, they're just not toeing the line. And again, it comes down, always comes back to the coaches. It's what, again, like Coach Saban's deal, if you see it, then you're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen.
And I think what happens with that environment, then you have players that, they take on their own agendas. Vontaze Burfict was clearly acting on his, he'd lost it. As you say, in that game, it became about him versus the Pittsburgh Steelers, not, the Steelers against the Bengals, to the point where actually when he makes that diving interception with 1:40 to go in the game, I don't think he knew that he'd tiny bit been tapped on the ankle. He probably thought he had been. But he was very, very close to not being down by contact. It would have been one of the most remarkable safeties in NFL history. But he made it about him. He wanted to run down the field and let everyone have all eyes on him for a while. He couldn't resist taking Antonio Brown's head off. We talk about different types of penalties. I thought his penalty at the end was a selfish one.
Well, there are a number of places in the game where you look at and you just, it's somewhat the world we live in today. It's a hey, look at me world. And
Shazier was dancing around like that after he laid out Giovanni Bernard, who left with a concussion.
Yeah, and again, that's the kind of stuff that when you're coaching, and we talk to our players all the time about, you can celebrate all you want, but celebrate with your teammates.
Yeah.
Don't taunt an opponent. Don't. I think that and this is the problem I have with the Shazier thing. Shazier is a great football player, but you go, first of all, the NFL has to look at the rule about helmet-to-helmet contact because he struck him with the crown of his head.
Right.
With all of the issues right now with protecting the players.
Yeah, I don't know how that's different from how a receiver going over.
Yeah, I mean, just because the guy turns and can see him coming, he can't adjust his body. He can't get out of that hit.
No.
And then you strike him with the top of your head to his head. Right, and again, as the rule stands today, it's not a penalty. I think they need to relook at that. And then additionally, when you see another player on the ground hurt, and then you celebrate over the top of him, there's no place for that in the game. None.
No. Adam Jones, after the game, I was in the car heading home, got a text message from Paddy Crowley, one of our assistant producers at Sky, says, check out Adam Jones on Instagram. I went on there. He was being driven. He was sitting, you could tell he was in the back of a car. And Jeff, I thought he was out of his mind with anger. It was an ugly looking video. It was not a good look for the NFL or for him. And I thought that we talked about Odell Beckham and the kind of people you want around you as a player. And some of these players have an entourage. I've seen it before at Super Bowls. They kind of, Josh Gordon coming in with four or five guys around him. And I thought there, I watched that video, which later got deleted, And I thought, that's the point. When Adam Jones gets in that car, fuming, because he stormed out of the locker room. This was about 45 minutes after the game had finished. It wasn't long after we'd gone off air. And if he's got a real friend there, a true friend, I think they say to, you know, let's go and get a drink, yes, Adam, but why don't you give me your phone for tonight and I'll give it back to you tomorrow morning.
Yeah, you know, because those guys aren't your friend, right? They're not your friend, mm-hmm. right? They're guys that want to be around you, want to be a part of the whole thing, right? But what is so tragic, and I've listened to Herm Edwards rant about this, is you have to surround yourself with people who, you know, they don't have to all be goody-two-shoes guys. No. But they have to understand what's best for you. And enabling behaviors is never best for the person, right? So what tends to happen in those entourage situations is there's not the voices that you need to hear are drowned out by the voices that you want to hear. Mm. And so they tell you, oh, man, you know, you got done by the officials. You know, it was what's Joey Porter doing on the field? Bottom line, you don't control Joey Porter. You don't control the officials. You have to control yourself because that's all you have control over. Mm. And these guys have proven over and over and over again that they can't control themselves. Now, they're great football players. And if you want them on your team, then have them on your team. But understand what you're going to get because at
risks you run.
Exactly, because at all times, we as human beings, under pressure, in high emotional situations, will go exactly back to what we are.
Hard to talk about the game without all that discipline stuff because it was unfortunately woven into the fabric of all 60 minutes of the game. But, you know, there were some interesting things to come out of it. We'll wait and see with Big Ben. He came back in the end after hurting his shoulder, but you know, the tests suggest he hasn't broken. They were worried about his collarbone, and that looks like he's okay with that. But he clearly couldn't drive the ball down the field at the end of the game.
Yeah, I think this is going to be interesting to see how these injury situations play out because, you know, D'Angelo Williams is you know, where's he going to be this week? Is he going to be able to, you know, play? If he can play, that really does help the Steelers because you got it. And I thought Todman and those guys did a good job filling in, but they're not D'Angelo Williams. Now, you get D'Angelo Williams back, that puts less pressure on Big Ben. If it's not a broken collarbone, which apparently it is not, and it's just an AC sprain, which is painful and certainly painful for a quarterback on his throwing shoulder, they can inject that and he can play through it. But again, his ability to really get on his front foot and really unleash one, you know, we'll just have to see if he has that ability or not. He's a tough. This is something the viewers got to understand.
Right.
When you see Ben Roethlisberger in person, You think you're looking at a big tight end or a small tackle. I mean, he is a big, strong, physical man, and he takes a pounding and never says a word.
Well, there's no injection for a concussion, so we've got to wait and see on Antonio Brown as well. I'd be sad if he wasn't playing in that playoff game because of what Burfict did to him, because you want to see the best players playing at this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely, no question. And but these are the factors; these are the uncontrollable factors.
Oh, it's like we've sitting all over the weekend, Jeff. It's like a war of attrition. The body's going down left.
It's just the nature of the game, and as they do a better job of, it's really kind of interesting if you think about it, Neil. As we become so much better on the medical side and on the recognition of potential dangers to the player's side, you see more and more injuries on the field, right? What 15 or 20 years ago, 30 years ago, certainly, you know, wouldn't even be addressed by the trainers. Now, you know, it can cost the guy the rest of the game, and that's good. That's the way it should be. But it also means that, you know, there's opportunities, you know, for more and more teams to lose players during the course of the game because of, you know, whether it's concussion or high ankle sprain or shoulder or all those things. And, you know, it's not always the team that starts out with the best roster that wins. It's the team that can finish with the healthiest guys.
I'm going to take a question from the mailbag now, Jeff, because it relates to the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game just as we wrap this up. It comes from Paul Grant, who says, after the Bengals-Steelers games, why do some teams always find a way to lose? Is it the head coach, mentality, or just luck? I mean, because players don't have that, I don't think, you know, I it's an interesting stat from a fan point of view, and it indicates that this team's not won a playoff game for 25 years. But I don't think once they get into the heat of the battle, players remember those kind of statistics. So what is it? Why does it come back to that discipline?
Well, I think it comes back always back to you know, the things that we're talking about. And this is why it's so important that we talk about them. Because think about it this way. If Boswell goes out there and misses the field goal like Blair Walsh did, and Blair Walsh goes out and hits the field goal like Boswell did, we're talking about this thing completely differently.
Right.
Even though everything leading up to it was exactly the same. You know, because we wouldn't be talking about Adrian Peterson's fumble, right? We wouldn't be talking as much about Vontaze Burfict's hit. We'd mention it, but when it costs you a football game,
that's different, isn't it?
That's different. Mm. But that's what you got to understand. You get those things, and, you know, again, one of the issues that's always plagued Adrian Peterson, and he's going to walk into the Hall of Fame as one of the great running backs of all time. What is that issue, Neil?
Yeah, it's fumbling, Jeff. I mean, let's move on to that game then. And Sunday's game, Seattle 10, Minnesota 9. I'll get onto the sort of defensive side in a moment. But Adrian Peterson, 23 carries, 45 yards. The fumble that he lost was set up the winning field goal for Seattle. We talked about the cold and Teddy Bridgewater's small hands. I've met Adrian Peterson. I've shook those big old hands that can crush yours easily. They are huge. But so it's not the size of the hands with Adrian Peterson, is it? But I think you sort of, we were sat there and you look at the ball getting away from his body just a little bit, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, carelessness almost. Exactly. And you know, you're talking about Seattle, who historically has created turnovers amongst the best in the league at it. And they practice, and everybody practices. I understand that. Everybody practices stripping the ball. But they really work at it. There's a difference between practicing it and making it a part of who you are. So the same thing is true on the other side. When you let the ball get away from your body with tacklers around you, and Jeremy Hill doesn't cap the ball or put a second hand on the ball when he's going down and you're trying to run out the clock, those are technique flaws. Those are fundamental errors. And those, in the end, that comes back first on the player, second on the coach. Yep. Because you got to, you know, Giants fans will remember Tiki Barber, right? Tiki Barber was a doggone good running back, real good running back, as a matter of fact. And the knock on Tiki Barber was he fumbler, right? Mm. What changed in Tiki Barber's career and made him a Pro Bowl running back was the coaches at the Giants, Tom Coughlin, number one, just drove it into him about ball security, ball security, ball security, ball security, because it's always about the football.
Curtis Martin, I think I told you that, told me the same story. They made him early on carry a football around, and he said it was even at lunch. He had to have that football around. He said he was like he was eating in prison. You know, he was like protecting his food because Parcells invited people to come and knock the ball out. So, you know, you can teach that.
That's a great way to say it, Neil, because he was protecting his food, and he was protecting the food of all of his teammates and all of his coaches.
If I'm a Vikings fan, Jeff, I see Adrian Peterson go into that game. He's facing the number one scoring defense in the NFL. He's facing a defense that you telestrated that likes to crowd the box and can play eight in the box. He's facing a defense that hasn't allowed a 100-yard rusher all season. So we know what Seattle are, but if I'm a Vikings fan and I know that everything goes through Adrian Peterson, I know that we don't use Mike Wallace as well as we maybe could do. We inhibit Kyle Rudolph because everything goes through Adrian Peterson. No matter what the opponent, in a playoff game, should I expect more than 23 carries for 45 yards?
Well, the first thing is,
I can imagine some of them may be asking that.
Yeah, I think it is a legitimate question. And, you know, I've read some, you know, talk, you know, in football circles about, you know, he's holding the offense back. I'm not sure about all that.
No.
I think that they think that their best opportunity, and again, let's really evaluate it for what it was. Minnesota is not as good as Seattle is. They don't have the roster Seattle has. They don't have some of the playmakers Seattle has. They don't have the quarterback Seattle has. So what you try and do in a playoff game in particular is find a way to make the game come down to the fourth quarter and win it in the fourth quarter. So Zimmer did, and his coaches did, a phenomenal job of giving their players a chance to move to the next round. It didn't happen for them. Now, instead of, and I'm not saying second guess it, I think what you have to do now is evaluate where you are. And we talk about picking through the rubble.
How you can improve
it. Yeah, how can we improve this? They cannot be, in my opinion, continue to be so dependent upon one player to be their offense. And he's a great player. He's a Hall of Fame player. But in this day and age, in this National Football League, people can stop the run if they want to stop the run. They're just going to put more people up there than you can block.
There are low-scoring games that are because of poor offense, and there are low-scoring games because of good defense. Which was this?
I think it was a low-scoring game because of great defenses. And I thought defensively, Minnesota, and you can say, well, it's the third running back in Seattle, but all the reality of it is the only plays that Seattle had were the zone read plays in the run game where, it was Russell Wilson making decisions and they weren't blocking one guy, or Russell Wilson scrambling around and finding players.
I was going to ask you that, Jeff. If this game had played out within the structure of how teams designed their plays, I don't think Seattle scores a touchdown. Because the first touchdown, this is how quickly things can change in the NFL. The first touchdown for Seattle comes on the back of a big pass to Tyler Lockett, which, had the ball been snapped to Russell Wilson, normally they may have penned him in like they did all day long. But because it went outside of structure and then all of a sudden there's all this pandemonium, someone forgot their assignment. They all rushed up to try and tackle Russell Wilson. There's a big pass play. That's how quickly it can change. But otherwise, Seattle might not have found the end zone.
No, and you know what? That's why when you hear us talk all the time about the importance of the quarterback position, the difference in the game was the quarterback position. Russell Wilson statistically did not have a great game, but Russell Wilson did some things at critical moments in the game to win the game for his football team. The play you're talking about is number one. He made enough throws, improvisational throws, and he also twice, and you made a great comment on in the broadcast, Neil, about his ability to sense when he's going to get sacked and get rid of the football.
Save
the yardage so that they can get the field goals to stay alive and keep pecking away at it. So, there's a lot of things that go into winning a football game, and Seattle can certainly be thankful that they had, Russell Wilson at quarterback.
Minnesota kept being patient on offense. They kicked it away and played defense, kicked away and played defense, and they got one more chance. And let's talk about the field goal then, that they had the chance to win it. Blair Walsh, who made the most field goals in the NFL this year, 34, but he did miss four extra points, so they're from 33 yards. So he wasn't perfect during the season, but he misses the 27-yarder. It started out left, and it went even further left, and it was lucky to hit the net behind the goalpost, which is pretty bad miss from that kind of range. So we've got a lot of questions, as you would expect, in the mailbag. Vernon Kay, the London Warriors safety, a good old friend of ours. Vernon says, in hindsight of Blair Walsh's miss, laces out or laces in. Anthony Bullock asks, why does the position of the laces matter so much? Jeff, you've coached special teams for many years, as among other positions in pro football and college ranks. When I was playing, I was always kind of taught, you want the laces away from you. And from that range, actually, even if the laces are facing you, it's only going to affect distance. It's not going to affect direction. As you get into longer kicks, if the laces were to the left, then it could influence the ball to the left slightly. So I think we go back to what you made the point right at the very start of this podcast, is that it would have only impacted it psychologically, right?
That's my opinion. I've been around some of the really fine kickers, and I'm talking about some really, really good kickers. But all of them are goofy about the laces.
Yes.
And, a 27-yard field goal, I could walk down Regent Street this afternoon and get 15 guys that can hit that. Now, can those 15 guys hit it in that situation? I'm not telling you that one. But what he was asked to do was not a demanding play.
No.
But you know, the holds were bad the entire game. Mm-hmm. The position of the ball was poor. The laces were out on one other one. And so Walsh really overcame poor mechanics in the holder two of the three times. It's just at the critical moment, you know, and again, to borrow Frank Ganz's term, those critical moments where man measures man, they didn't come through.
No, he was in tears afterwards. I mean, he did, you know, he did man up, and he answered every question in the locker room, and then all the reporters sort of walked away and he just started sobbing. He was just like, and it was heartbreaking to see, because it's that kind of miss, like, it's like Gary Anderson in that 98 season when the Vikings were, you know, they were so good and supposed to go to the Super Bowl, but it didn't come for. And he said that he knew straight away. He and I've watched the kick over and over again. He just doesn't look right. He's falling. His plant leg is falling away. He said he rushed it, and maybe that goes back to Richard Sherman almost getting the one on the long one before. But should a kicker be rushed because of something that happened before?
No. Right, and again, but what shoulda, woulda, coulda?
Yeah, of course.
Right, and we'd have a great Christmas.
Yeah,
but the reality is, when Sherman came off the edge and just got his fingers on one of them, that immediately starts to work on the kicker psychologically. Mm. And I tweeted out right before he lined up for the thing. I said they better remember to block Sherman off the edge.
Yeah.
Well, now when a kicker kicks a right-footed kicker. Misses to the left as badly as he missed that, it's because he over-rotated or got through the ball too fast.
Yeah.
Right? So the snap was a little high, mm-hmm. which is a, you know, again, took a tenth of a second for Locke to get it down, and he had the laces, and the ball, the position of the ball wasn't great. So all of those all those factors come into it, and you know, we talk all the time about football being a game of inches. Mm. It is a game of inches, because that one little inch of over rotation yanks that ball on what should have been a really easy kick to win the game.
It's interesting you point out all three aspects of that snap, hold, and kick, because Jeff Locke said after the game, he said, "We as a special teams trio missed that kick." Not Blair Walsh.
Yeah, there's no question, and again, it wasn't good from the start, and. You know, it was something that I'm sure the special teams coach in Minnesota was trying to address with them on the field. But I'm just going to say, and I truly believe this, that the cold, and you got to understand, and when it's that cold and you go out there and you're barehanded and you're trying to put that thing down, the number one thing you want to do is get it down.
Yeah.
And then thinking about spinning the ball and getting the laces away and the proper tilt and all that stuff. It's just one of the things that makes it so tough to play in cold weather games.
All right, let's move on to the last game of the weekend then. And it started out well for the Washington Redskins. They were 11-0 up against the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay go on to win it 35-18. I've got a couple of things written on my notes here, Jeff. Tempo and running game. Is that how the Packers turned this one around?
Well, you know what? As you looked at the game, and again, I've been... you know, openly critical of, you know, Green Bay being hard-headed on offense and saying, well, this is what we are and this is what we're going to be and this is how we're going to do it and this is the Packer way.
Yep.
And it's cost them some games. But I really thought that Mike McCarthy did a great job of getting into some personnel groups. He kind of was scratching around for what worked for him. And then all of a sudden...
A poor first quarter, didn't they?
Yeah, and he got into some personnel groups that... really made it tough on Washington. They didn't know how to handle it. And it was kind of a unique one where initially they had a tight end, then they had Kuhn, and then they put a receiver in the backfield.
Randall Cobb in
the backfield. And when Cobb was in the backfield, they didn't know how to handle that. They tried to play their nickel against that because usually anytime you see three receivers go on the field, you're going to match with your nickel back.
Right.
So you have two corners and your nickel corner go in to match the three receivers. Well, that's what you know Washington was trying to do, and it left them one linebacker short in their gaps. And so they were able to run the football really well, and then the changes of tempo really made it tough. You know, there was a lot of... I made a comment as we were watching the game, four or five times I saw Terrence Knighton looking at the sidelines with his hands up, you know, giving you that, what we call Palmer, with his hands up like this. And you know that they're frustrated and they're confused because the calls aren't coming fast enough and they don't like what's going on the field. And once the Packers found that, then they, you know, they did a great job of, you know, unleashing their killer instinct and going after him. And they, you know, that young corner that Washington has.
Quinton Dunbar.
Yeah. They went after him big time. They went, if he was out wide, they went after him. They tried to hide him inside, and then they found him inside. So, again, great job out of Packer coaching staff and calling the game. And again, just an illustration, again, of what that offense can do if you can protect the quarterback and you play zone, because they will rip you to shreds in zone.
Just one sack allowed as well, so the offensive line tightened things up there. Again, probably helped out by the overall game plan because they didn't.
I'm with you 100%, Neil, and I think, you know, McCarthy needs to get the credit for that.
I thought actually watching this game, and Aaron Rodgers was kind of running around and kind of got his excitement back, and it was interesting how things played out in the week leading up to this, because, you know, I read a lot of the local newspapers. I like to see, I watch a lot of the press conferences. I look at it from that sort of media side of it. And the Packers actually arranged a special interview with the local newspaper, a sit-down with Aaron Rodgers, which you don't normally get at this time of year, and with Mike McCarthy separate, because they both felt they needed to address their relationship and how they'd butted heads a little bit. I thought that was interesting first. Then there was a lot of reports coming out of Green Bay that, well, Aaron Rodgers is happier this week than he's been in a long time. And I thought he actually tried to... Because I thought he overdid it a little bit. I didn't think you could be that happy on the sidelines during a game. He looked, especially at the end, he was like jumping up and chest bumping. And I was like, this is the wild card round. You've won the Super Bowl before. It was almost as if he knew that he'd put out so much bad body language in the previous month and that players might look to him, that he had made a conscious effort to go the other way.
Well, it was interesting because early in the game, I don't know if you caught it, but he and his position coach, he had harsh words for his position coach after the sack because of the route, the way the route was run. But it was interesting to see the smile back on his face and the bounce in his step, because that's the Aaron Rodgers that is so magic when he's playing with that kind of fun. I guess is the only way I can describe it. But he's not been that guy. And I guess when you've been hit as many times as he's been hit, the game isn't much fun.
What about Washington as we wrap up their season? They went 9-7 in the regular season. This was a good season.
Yeah, good season for them. Heck, you're NFC East champion. You do an awful lot of things. You found a tight end who can be, I think, a real, real good player for you. You're starting to develop the kind of football team that you want to have. They, you know, ran the ball better at the end. Defensively, they still have a ways to go. They need corners. They need help in that secondary. And, you're looking at some older guys back there now too, that how much more they have. I would say they need to draft on defense and continue to build that defensive football team. Cousins is a free agent. They're gonna have to, you know, figure out how, what they're gonna do with that. RG3, you know, when will they, you know, make the decision, you know, whether to keep him or leave him. There's a lot of stuff to do in Washington, but you gotta feel good about the fact you're in the playoffs again. You won your division, and now it's, you know, let's get to the next step.
Take another question out of the mailbag because it relates to a bit of news around the NFL. From the Finn Troopers, who say, what are your opinions on the hiring of Adam Gase? Is he the right man to try and fix the Dolphins' offense? I mean, in terms of the body of work, Jeff, I think we both like who he's worked with and what he's done there. You never really know what a coordinator is going to do when he becomes a head coach, because they sometimes are two different. What I call on 3rd and 6... is not the same as standing up in front of my team and getting them ready to play an opponent, is it? They're different skills.
No, and I think he's a young guy, 37 years old, with a bright, bright future. He has shown that he can work with quarterbacks. That's the number one thing, and I think that was probably the number one selling point he had, because he doesn't have head coaching experience. As a matter of fact, let's go through his history just because I think it's interesting. He was a student assistant for Nick Saban at Michigan State and was impressive enough as a student assistant, which is just a kid going to school there that wanted to hang around, to follow Saban to LSU as a graduate assistant. And then he's really risen very, very quickly. He seems to have an ability to work with quarterbacks, and that's really important, because I think Tannehill's a good enough quarterback to win with down there. interesting how he's built his staff. The defensive coordinator for the Dolphins is going to be a guy by the name of Vance Joseph. And Vance is an NFL Europe guy, actually played for me in NFL Europe.
Okay.
And he started to put around him dynamic young coaches. And I think that's positive. I think that's they're only going to keep it. It appears like they're only going to keep their special teams coach. And I think everybody else, with the possible exception of Dan Campbell, is going to move on out of Miami. So they're going to get a fresh start, clean slate. And, again, I'm optimistic for how he'll do.
All right. So this is normally the point where we'd make our picks for this coming weekend. Feels a bit early. It's Monday. Why don't we?
Is it Monday? I can't tell you.
I know. It was nice to see you again today, actually. I feel like I haven't seen you for a while. I'm going to see more of you than my wife probably over the next few weeks, Jeff.
And that's a little bit scary, isn't
it? That is, because we're going to be on the road together this week. Then we'll be back in the studio for all of next weekend. Then back on the road the week after. Oh, all the joys. Sitting around talking football. So I shouldn't make programming notes while we're live recording this podcast. But what about if we make our picks in front of one of the audiences this week, and then we play that out later in the week?
I think that's a good way to do it.
Because it feels a bit early on a Monday.
Yeah, there's so much. We got to know injury situations, all that stuff. And so we got to second guess ourselves a little bit.
And we'll get the sound effects of people booing us when we pick against their team.
How about I had the Redskins.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
I had the Redskins. And when they got to 11-0, I thought, you know, wow. You know,
I think you changed, Jeff. I checked this out this morning. So you had, I've got the wrong notebook in front of me. We both went 2-2 because you changed right at the last. You talked yourself out of it. You had Green Bay in the end.
Oh, man.
So you had Green Bay and Kansas City. And you went Minnesota. That was the difference.
That was the one.
So
that
you went 2-2. I picked.
Doggone kicker.
Yeah, there you go. I picked Kansas City and I picked Seattle. So I went 2-2 as well. So we'll make our picks a little bit later in the week at one of our live events so that we've got some colourful sound effects as a nice
backdrop.
That's
awesome. That's awesome.
So a couple more questions then just to wrap up. From Tom Yeomans, who says, do you guys prefer a defensive game like Vikings and Seahawks or a high-scoring offensive battle? I know which way you're probably going to go. But for me, I like close games with drama and storylines. And that's, you know, as a journalist, I think that's what you look for. You look for good stories. And everyone loves a close game. But I enjoyed Minnesota and Seattle. I really did. What about you?
You know, to me, and if you're talking to me as a fan of the game, I'm going to say I like defensive games because I don't look at the game, though, I think the way most fans look at the game, right? Mm-hmm. Because I've been trained on defense and... But I also, if you're talking to me about as a broadcaster, I enjoy the offensive games because typically with the telestrator, you have a much better opportunity to bring football to the fans than you do on a defensive game because there's more, it's easier to show how the game works with the telestrator, which is, I think, one of the greatest things about the telestrator. That is just, that's like our playpen when we go down there because, you know, every time I go down there, I think about, you know, this is going to be so cool because I think this is something that the fans may not recognize because you watch the game and the game goes so fast.
Yeah.
You don't have you know, like in coaching, we have that button that runs it back and forth and runs it back and forth and we grind it back and forth. When you're watching a game on TV, you don't have that opportunity.
Well, you've upped your telestrator game now, Jeff. It's not just a telestrator wasn't enough for you this weekend. We had to have football and a ruler. I mean, next week it'd be sticky back plastic. Bits of Kyle cardboard and stuff. All good ones.
We're going back to our roots, though. When we go out on the road, we're going to go back to the roots. We're going to get the grease board out. You know what? We might get ready because we may break out old school, which is the human telestrator.
Oh, yes. Volunteers required. Couple more questions. Mark Budden says, did the 37 combined playoff starts for the road quarterbacks this past weekend versus... 0 combined playoff starts for the home quarterbacks make a difference? I think you just gave a couple of plays as an example, Jeff. Russell Wilson, the one goes over his head, he picks it up and he throws it. He's about to get sacked and he makes a play. Some way, somehow, he made a play. Same way against Green Bay in the NFC Championship game. Some way, somehow, they made plays. So I think it did. I think experience did count.
Well, you think about it, in every single game, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, in every single game, if you looked at just the quarterback position and you evaluated the two quarterbacks, you would give the nod in every one of those games to the veteran. Yeah. Every single one of those games.
just on the veteran quarterback over rookie, I saw AJ McCarron, a quote after the game, after the Bengals game, where he kind of tried to say that one of the reasons they struggled. He said, every time Cincinnati had the ball, it seemed to rain harder. And when Pittsburgh had the ball, the rain seemed to stop. Even if that's true, don't say it, AJ. That's clutching at straws, man. Oh, what are you doing?
Oh, please. Yeah.
He did press conferences at Alabama, right?
Yeah, wow. Come on, son.
Just to wrap up, what about the man we haven't talked about, the Martavis Bryant catch, Jeff? I mean, incredible athleticism, but I think he genuinely realized halfway through that catch, and we're talking split seconds here, that to complete the catch, he needed to get that ball from behind him in front of him.
You know what? This is why I love it. One of the reasons why I love this game so much is I have done this professionally for a long time, since 1981. That's a lot of years.
Yep.
And I've watched I don't know how many football games. And still, to this day, these athletes are so incredible that they do things that you just go, did I really see that?
Yeah.
And that was one of those, did I really see that? It's almost like you go through every stinking game and somebody's making a play that physically you, because if you've played the game and you're on, you realize how difficult.
But defy logic, defy physics.
Like Micah Hyde's backhanded, one-handed interception 2 weeks ago. The tight ends are catching balls one-handed all over the field.
Doug Baldwin in minus 21 degrees catching just a one-handed.
Incredible catch. Plays that you just look at and you go, these guys are truly, they really, really are the greatest athletes on the planet.
I did a little stint on Sky Sports News on Sunday before we went on air, and they showed the Odell Beckham catch from last year against Dallas where he reaches back and does that. And then they said, where would you place Martavis Bryant? I said, actually, you could make a case for it being better because there was athleticism that was required to hold the ball. But then there was some mental aspect that he had to think about halfway through. And then
a backflip.
But the flip was not a flip that was 8 foot in it. You try doing a flip from 2 foot off the ground and landing it. It's just incredible.
And, you know, and those are just the ones that really stick out at you.
Oh, they happen
because
all the
time. Ball's there, right?
Yeah.
But when you watch the game closely and you grind through the tape like I grind through the tape, you see these guys do things that physically people that big should never. I mean, we focused on Michael Bennett a little bit during the course of the game. Michael Bennett is his quickness and ability to get off block. I mean, you should not be able to move that fast at the size he is. But again, he's one of the, like we say, one of the finest athletes on the planet. And I'm not disparaging other sports. I'm not going to get into that. But I'm just telling you, when you see these guys that are so big, that can move so fast and have such great quickness, it's scary, really.
And depth in terms of who can do it. Look at Fitzgerald Toussaint. No one would have known who he was, and we're watching him make jump cuts and great plays.
Who's Todman?
I mean, it shows you the NFL is the best of the best. As I said to you when I came back from minicamp in the summer, I was watching guys who are not in the league now, because they didn't make that final roster, make incredible one-handed diving catches that had me reaching for my roster to find out who they
were.
Who
is that guy?
And they're not even in the NFL.
Who is that guy? You know, and again, that's one of the reasons why I love doing what I'm doing, because, it's incredible. Every day you walk on that practice field and you know that you're working with some of the finest athletes on the planet. It's an amazing experience.
Well, you will not be working with one of the finest athletes on the planet this week, but we are coming to a city near you. You're with me, my friend.
I'm with you always.
Let's,
man,
pack our woolies because it's going to be cold up north, but we're on our way to Newcastle and Edinburgh. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with skysports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by draftkings.co.uk, the home of one day fantasy football. Jeff, we're looking forward to seeing all the fans. Say goodbye until Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, and whether it's Newcastle or Edinburgh or any place we're going on the road, make sure when you come to the road show, wear your NFL gear, bring your attitude, and let's have some fun. Because you know what? We're going to say hello and goodbye in Hawaiian today. Aloha.